Other than that, I am ready.
Okay.
It's weird. Usually I'm not.
Usually you're never ready.
I know.
Oh, God, you're ready.
I know.
That means this show's gonna suck. Welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Check this out! Sorry.
Wow!
I feel great. Matter of fact, let's jump to Hip Watch. Last week at this time, I hurt.
You couldn't even sit.
No. I got my cortisone shot on Friday. I feel, well, let's quote The Prisoner. I feel a new man. And by God, I do. I mean, my hip doesn't hurt. My muscles have loosened up. My left hip isn't hurting. Oh, sweet of Jesus, I cannot believe what a change that makes.
And how long is it good for?
That's what I'm praying for, because, you know, as good as I feel and as much as I feel like, you know, running around the lake, I realize, you know, some people it lasted a week, some people it lasted 6 weeks. Me, I want it to last to November 29th. The big thing is I cannot get another one. Because you can only get it every 3 months, and in order to get the operation, it has to be out of my system. And Doc said I could do it now, and then, you know, since he can't get me until November 29th, I figured that worked out pretty good. However, with Hip Watch, there's two new segments I'm going to add to Hip Watch, two subcategories, if you might.
You're just, I think you're milking this. I think you're milking this for more podcast time, and Lord knows you don't need more podcast time.
There's that. I mean, it, you know, really, the cortisone shot was a freaking miracle for me, because, you know, and the weird thing was, is I don't know if you've ever had one or heard of it. They're like, I don't know, 4-inch long needles, you know, and they had to use an ultrasound because they have to get it right where the bone is on bone in the hip. And so usually you just lay back and relax. Well, I couldn't. I mean, it was like my muscles were so tense and hurt so badly. I was in like an inverted V. And he's like, well, you got to relax for 2 minutes. And it's like, okay, I'll figure something out. Fortunately, I can move the other leg. I got it propped up. He says, okay, you ready? I said, hang on. Stretched it one more time. I said, okay. And then I just had to concentrate on not moving. And it didn't so much hurt because they numb it going in. But it was just the muscles around it did not want to cooperate. And he was like trying to hold them down. And I was like, oh, I said, it hurts more like a bad massage than it does. And as soon as he pulled it out, I felt the numbness. And within a day, I was like, I can walk. However, there is one problem with the cortisone. It does wonders to the blood sugar, and not in a good way. My blood sugar spiked like about 195. You generally don't want them over 120. So I will add, the first one will be blood sugar watch. Actually, it was going to be in the freaking category, because yesterday, like I said, when I finally got my new blood sugar meter, and problem was is the old one was discontinued. So I had to go and see the doctor, well, just see a nurse and get a new one and blah, blah, blah. So my first blood sugar spike was like 195, and I was like, oh. But then when
no
I did it
Twinkies.
Later, it was 145.
No.
Because I'd actually taken it easy. And this morning, my fasting was 90. So it's obviously something I ate the night before. So I just really got to kind of watch what I'm doing. And, you know, I've done it before. You know, you remember back when I first became diabetic, became as if it was my fucking choice. When I found out I was diabetic when I had the shop, you know, I was like, okay, no more Three Musketeer eating contests, no more sugar pop. I would walk. I went out for gas for hours, you know, walked here. I remember I walked to the shop, walked back. If I knew I didn't have to do a deposit that night, I would just walk. So I think I have the blood sugars in check, because the other thing is that the doctor will not operate if the blood sugar's high, because right. The higher the blood sugar, the less your body can heal. So that's kind of going my way. But now this one is something else that they got to watch, and this is called blood pressure watch.
Now, I know about that.
Good, because I was going to ask the Strode.
What did you do? A shiny new dime.
No, for my fucking health. I'll make it a quarter if it works. What did you do to get your blood sugar down?
Blood pressure.
I'm sorry, blood pressure. Yeah, I'm assuming you don't have problems with blood sugar.
I do not. At least not yet. My father has diabetes, so I do keep a watch on that. My blood pressure was what they called fucking scary.
What was it?
210 over 110 or 120.
Okay. Yeah, mine is like 160 over 80 or 90 or something.
All right. The first thing that they want you to do, they say no salt. However, recent studies show salt is okay, but you have to drink a lot of water, because the water flushes the salt out. So if you're going to put a lot of salt on your food, you're going to be drinking more water.
Now, is that the same as sodium?
Yeah, salt is sodium. Because salt is sodium NaCl.
Yeah, and
sodium chloride.
As part of the blood sugar, I'm trying to cut out more processed foods.
Yep.
Eat less of them, because a lot of that's got sodium.
Yes.
So, okay.
They got a lot of salt. That's a preservative. Mm-hmm. So get rid of the processed food. No more fast food at all, because fast food is unbelievably filled with salt and sodium. More fruits, more vegetables. They put me on medication. They put me on meds because mine was scary high. I mean, I don't know if I told you or I mentioned it on the podcast. They told me I had to quit weightlifting until my blood pressure came down, because they were worried that I would have a stroke. And one of the side effects of my blood pressure medication, you've seen it when we go out on Free Comic Book Day. If I squat for a while and stand up,
head rush.
It's more than just a head rush. There was one time I was at Half Price Book and Magazine, where I stood up, the world went dark, I dropped everything. And the only thing that kept me from falling to the ground was the bookcase behind me. I mean, the world literally goes dim. And, well, that's because my blood pressure is so much lower than it was that my body's still kind of going, wait a minute. But here's the bad thing with your hip, exercise. Lots of exercise, but the main thing you can do, eat healthier food, broccoli, cauliflower, more fiber-filled vegetables and fiber-filled fruit. That's going to help with the blood pressure. Less salt, less meat. If your blood pressure is still 160 over whatever in a month, you may need to go on blood pressure medication, and I don't know if they will do the surgery with that. Will they?
They will. They just want it down.
Okay.
And I'm actually on meds, and I did talk to my doctor. I've seen so many freaking doctors in the last 3 weeks. And my primary guy I talked with, and I told him what I had, and he said I'm actually on the lowest dose possible. So
yeah.
Before that, I think I was hovering like about 149 over 90 or something. So he says there's room to go up. His big thing is, especially with the blood sugar and with the blood pressure, you know, I'm walking around in constant pain. He says, so you got to make sure That's not raising the blood pressure artificially. The cortisone shots and the antihistamines that they gave me, not only when I was having my allergic reaction, but at the beginning of this, when I went from chiropractic to trying meds, that's all affected in there. So I think the big thing is I probably can't exercise hard, but as long as I can move, I'm just going to start walking again. And, you know, I do see even I'll walk a little bit, and then every so often I'll feel a twinge, like hips saying, okay, you're not 100%, but I ain't going to be till I get the operation done. So, well, good. That actually helped. Here's your quarter, by the way.
It's a shiny new dime.
I'm going to give you two rusty quarters, so, because I'm very appreciative of that. So, and I have one other question. Now, you do that. You do some type of meditation thing.
Yes, I do. I do meditation. And recently, about a year ago, I got the Insight Timer. The app Insight Timer that's, I don't know if it's available on Apple, but I know it's available on Google. It's free. It's a meditation timer, but it also has what is known as guided meditation. Now, there's good and bad for that. The good is that there's a lot of guided meditation out there to choose from. And if you don't know how to meditate, it's a really good way to start. I know that Howard Stern pushes transcendental meditation. You don't have enough money for that. None of us have enough money for that. Their classes are hugely expensive, because I did look into it, and the classes are really expensive, and you really don't need it. Meditation has all this mysticism around it and everything, but it's really just sitting down and in your head. You know how you have that running voice, that running commentary in your brain all the time?
Sure.
You relax. And you imagine that's a radio, and you just turn it down until you turn it off.
Falling asleep doesn't count.
No, falling asleep doesn't count unless you're falling asleep while turning that voice in your head down. Guided meditation is really good in that it will teach you how to meditate. It will help you to... Because basically, the main thing that I was always taught, and I still keep, is you concentrate on your breathing. You breathe in through your nose, you force it all the way down, you hold it, because when you're really breathing deep, your belly expands, because that's where most of your lungs are. You know, that where you think your belly is? No, your belly's lower. That's your lungs are there. So you want to really expand the lungs, and then let it out through your mouth. And you just concentrate on your breathing. Because if you're concentrating on your breathing, you can't concentrate on all the other stuff.
Like elephants swimming.
Or, you know, the fact that you need to make sure that you clean out the car and that the podcast needs to go up tomorrow.
Sorry.
Insight Timer's really good for new people in the meditation. There's also, you've got the DDP yoga. There's also stuff on that about calming your breathing, calming stuff like that. You may want to start doing the DDP yoga rather than walking if your hip starts to give you trouble again.
Yeah, see, that's what was so bad about the hip. There was no way I was doing anything except sitting and resting and icing and who knows? Hopefully in 3.5 months? We'll have a number of guest podcasters.
Yeah.
When I'm recovering, you know, this is your chance to see if you've got what it makes to join the podcasting world. And everybody can. You know, it's not that thing. It's not that tough. Show up. Corey will call you. He does the hard part.
I do.
You do. Oh. And every week. And I say that over and over. You know, I just show up and I get to be a smartass every week. You get to turn our beloved missive. And, I mean, we talk for 6 hours straight. 6 hours. And Corey puts it down to a manageable hour and a half. Oh, except when Stephanie's on. Then 3-4 hours.
Because she's got great stories.
She does. We love stories.
Well, yeah, now that your hip's better, you got to read, didn't you?
I did.
So, before we get into what you've been reading, there's some news. There's hot news, Joe. Hot news.
Oh, okay.
First is one that I have some feelings on.
Ooh.
If you have been following the saga of Stan Lee, there have been a lot of court cases and a lot of this and a lot of that, a lot of fighting over trademarks and everything. And about, what, 2-3 weeks ago, Rob Liefeld put out a picture and wrote up that he went and visited Stan and had a wonderful afternoon with him. And he had not been able to do that for a long time because the people who were kind of watching over Stan didn't allow him to have visitors. And then a couple days after that, it was announced that Stan Lee will no longer do public signings. And do you want my opinion, Joe?
Yes.
It's about damn time! The guy's 95 years old.
Yeah.
My dad is in his early 70s. And for him, getting on a plane, going somewhere, and taking a couple hundred pictures and signing up a couple hundred books, I can't even imagine him doing that. Stan is 95 years old. He should not have been doing it for the past few years. I do like that on the last kind of tour he did, they did say at conventions, this is Stan's last appearance here, Stan's last appearance here. But Stan's not going to do signings anymore, and I couldn't be happier. He's 95. Let him rest.
Besides, if you want some Stan Lee autographs, they're all over the place. Not to mention you could go to like Dynamic Forces and pick one or two up if you wanted.
And so, if you've looked at the pictures that people have taken with him over the last couple of years, because I've seen, you know, friends of mine have gone to conventions and paid the money to get the picture with him. Stan looks beat to hell. He looks exhausted. I'm a little over 50, and the whole idea of getting on a plane, all I could think is, if I'm going to fly somewhere, I'm going to need to be there for a week, because I don't want to get on it, deal with all the crap about getting on a plane, then coming back and doing the same thing 2 days later. I don't want to do it. Even when I was younger, flying was a hassle. But imagine, you know, you're 95, and he was getting on a plane, you know, being carted around, signing pictures for, you know, signing and taking pictures for 8, 10, 12 hours for 2 days, and then getting back on a plane and going back to L.A. No, enough. It's enough. He's done enough. Second thing.
I have one question for you.
Sure.
How many omnibuses did you get today?
I didn't get any today.
Oh, you didn't? I thought you had box day.
My box day was Monday.
Oh, what'd you get on Monday?
Let me take a look.
Because I ended up with 3, which could explain why I hurt my back trying to get the bloody box. Yes, it's time for Backwatch. No. Like ibuprofen, some ice, maybe some Fireball. I'll be doing okay.
Oh, let's see. We're going to have hip watch, back watch, leg watch. And me, first, it's going to be, today was leg day. I'm tired because leg day, you're...
Stupid legs. You go squish now.
I will say something, Joe. Whenever I watch you and Butch get up, it always makes me think, what the hell have I done so that when I get up, I still get up and, hey, everything's fine.
I don't know about Butch, but you were taking care of yourself in the 80s and 90s.
Well, and yeah, Butch doesn't look like he was taking care of himself. Because now he gets up with, oh Lord. Well, while I'm pulling up my list, because all my books are in my bedroom now, why don't you tell the people what you got?
You're building your bedroom is what you're telling
us. Damn right.
Yeah, no, I got Punisher, Garth Ennis, Volume 2, Avengers by Jonathan Hickman, 2, Batman by Grant Morrison, 1, and of those 3, I have never read Batman Grant Morrison, nor have I read The Punisher.
You haven't read the Morrison Batman, huh?
Nope.
No wonder Final Crisis confused the hell out of you.
I basically decided I would just wait and read it as it came out in book form, and that never happened. And now that they're going omnibuy, I'll do that. Sort of omnibuy, I did get from Dark Horse Dork by Evan Dorkin, which is, I believe, everything Dork-related. I got a couple of the, how do you say it, Shaolin Cowboy?
Yep.
Jeff Darrell, the two books that are available through Dark Horse. And I don't believe it's the original miniseries. And I've seen copies of the original miniseries. Not only the comic, but the book are just crazy. I'm hoping sooner or later they'll reprint it. And then the final book in my backbreaking, and this is just the hard covers. This doesn't count the soft covers in regular comics. The Prisoner. Original art edition.
Oh, you did get that.
I did. I went back and I said, you know, I got to get this. It's not in. So believe me, I totally blanked that I had it. As I'm digging through the box full of Fluggies and I get all the way to the bottom. And what the heck is this? It's Pig. Dun 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 dun. And then about 20 minutes later, I stopped singing the theme song and. So that was my workout for today.
No, the big books I got in mind, because I get mine every 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah, you're privileged.
No, I just pay more.
Yes.
I got the comic book implosion book.
Yeah, I have that laying in my box somewhere.
Creepy Archives, number 26. Yes, they have restarted the Creepy Archives. And it looks like they're going to do Creepy and Eerie every other month until they get them done. So... I know that a few years ago they quit doing them, but now it's looking like they're just going to, we're going to finish them up. Thank goodness. I wonder if that means that they're eventually going to do some of the other Warren stuff, like 1984, 1994, The Rook. Let's see, Hellboy Omnibus, Volume 3.
Got that too. Again, I've never read them, so for me, I'm still reading Volume 2, so I got to get caught up to 3.
Project Superpowers Omnibus number 1. And this is the Alex Ross and Jim Kruger who did Universe X. Hello?
Hello? Nice lady.
And this is them doing a bunch of the public domain heroes. So.
Hello? I can't talk now. I'm podcasting.
And a Craig Yeo book because, you got to have a Craig Yeo book.
Yo.
Super Patriotic Heroes. So those were the big ones in my box day. But the second news story I wanted to ask you about, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Lee and Dan DiDio have said not only have the Walmart comics been a huge hit, but they want to expand the line to 8 books. And I was going to ask, what other books should they be doing? Now, issue 2 should be out for those, so I have not heard if they're out or not. But
yeah, I haven't seen them. I will say, a number of weeks ago, when my hip actually it stabilized a bit, I ran around and checked about 6 different Walmarts until I was finally able to get a set together. My observation is that the smaller Walmarts, at least in the Twin Cities, don't have them. But if you go to the bigger ones, they're right up front. I found a few that actually had the display, but they were sold out. And then, of course, I lucked out and found one that had all 4 of them. And so I don't know if that's going to change, if the smaller Walmarts will be picking them up. So if you're keen on getting them, check the bigger ones. I haven't read them yet. I did give kind of a thumbs through, and I don't know. It's... I guess for beginners, it's not a bad way to kind of gauge interest in comics. I didn't see if there were any ads like saying, go here to check other comics.
Yes, there are there are ads for the comic shop locator.
Okay. So it'll be interesting to see, obviously they're selling well. I don't believe they're going to be a collector's item like everybody think they are, except for... wait over the course of time. I can only wonder what the people who paid like $50 for a complete set would feel now that they realize they can probably get a regular set at regular price. But I guess it's not a bad thing for especially since Walmart doesn't seem to want to carry a $3.99 comic, but a $4.99 book thing like that. Now, I wonder, are these considered returnable for them? Because I can't believe Walmart would buy anything without a return clause in them. Not that it matters. We're snapping them all up anyways.
I don't know, because they're kept with the baseball cards, and I know baseball cards are not returnable.
Yeah.
So, and if you... I don't know if they had them at the Walmart you went to, but there was that DC Showcase magazine that came out about a year ago that reprinted four comics for $10. $9.99, because it said under $10. Yeah, it's $9.99. But the one that I got a bunch of my 100 pagers at had a big old buttload of those, but they'd marked them down to $5. And I hadn't even heard of that DC Showcase thing until I saw it. And then I went online, and it's like, oh, yeah, that was DC testing the waters about a year ago. Mm-hmm. So if Walmart is bargaining them out at $5, that means that they were not returnable. Because they will return stuff in a heartbeat, but if they can't return it, mark it down.
There was probably something there. Because usually... when you get a big retailer like that, they might not want to deal with the cost of returns, but you can be damn sure DC coughed up some credit. Said, okay, here, how about if we try this program and we give you a credit for that? Because there's no way big retailers work without that type of margin.
Well, and the other thing I'd always heard, the reason comics weren't in Walmart was, you know, Marvel went to them years and years ago. And Walmart has a thing where you cannot sell to anyone else cheaper. So if you sell to someone else cheaper, they have a thing in their clause that says, oh, okay, we get the whatever price is the cheapest price you sell it at to someone else, we get it at that price. And if we find out that you're doing it at that price, we get a penalty for the contract. It's a most favored nations type clause. And, while they were going through it, Walmart said, well, you sell to Diamond Distribution for 60% off cover. We want that. And Marvel said, well, that's non-returnable. And Walmart said, doesn't matter. Returnable or not, we want that. That's the lowest. You know, you're giving that discount to them. You need to give it to us. We're much bigger than Diamond is. And negotiations broke down over that because Walmart didn't. Basically, they didn't quite... I don't know if they didn't understand the direct market or they just didn't care. But that's what I always heard as to why comics weren't in Walmarts, other than, you know, the magazine distributors were able to put in, you know, the new Marvel magazine that has reprints of some stuff, and the Archie Digest. Archie basically paid to get into that, and then when Archie decided to no longer pay to get into that, it was just part of the regular magazine shipment that they got from whoever the local magazine distributor was. But, Joe, they're going to do four other Walmart comics. What do you think they should be?
I think the next round should be Aquaman, because you got the Aquaman movie coming, and I think that'll catch people's attention. You can't go wrong with Wonder Woman. And I think Teen Titans might be a good one.
They've already got Teen Titans.
But do Teen Titans Go? Of course, the movie might be gone by the time that comes out. I heard that movie's also excellent to go to if you're a comic guy, regardless if you dig the cartoon or not. Just a lot of enjoyment for comic fans. I don't know if a DC-wide, you know, I mean, obviously Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, Justice League, you stick with the ones, maybe a Suicide Squad, although I don't know if somebody will freak out at the idea, oh, suicide in a comic book, you know, because that's all it takes is one person to bitch at a Walmart, and boy, that stuff's out of there. I mean, that's how they yanked comics out when I had the comic shop, because they had comics, and there was something regrettable, and objectionable. And boy, they yanked them all out because, you know, we used to cruise Walmarts. That was one of the places to look for the hot comics that you could buy and bring back to the shop.
Well, and it also really depended on the local area, because when I was in college, D.C., you know, there were Marvels at the local Walmart, but there was no D.C., because D.C. didn't have a distribution arm in central Illinois, and I'd always heard that it was, you know, major parts of the Midwest, they didn't have a distribution arm, because it was, the local comic shop talked about it. It's like, yeah, D.C. doesn't have distribution at newsstands, so all the stuff they're putting out for new readers, like, you know, Superman. Well, Superman's direct market only here in our area because nobody carries it. Nobody carries Batman. Nobody carries these comics on the newsstands. See, the ones I would choose, you're focusing on the movies. I would focus on the TV. I would have a Flash comic.
Ooh. Yeah, you could do that. Supergirl, Green Arrow.
I would have a Green Arrow comic. I would have Wonder Woman because, you know, it's Wonder Woman. And in Wonder Woman, I would also have Harley Quinn, and that would basically be female heroes. And then the fourth book, because it's one of the TV shows, I would just use this title and Legends of the DC Universe.
Sure. And you could put in Black Lightning and a few other ones as well.
Yeah, just, you know, it would be other characters that may not carry a book on their own. But, you know, I think the TV more than the movies, because the movies are there for a while and then they're gone. But the TV is there every week. CW has basically become DC TV. It's also one of the few places where they rerun the shows, which surprised me because no network shows reruns. But they're rerunning Supergirl, they're rerunning Flash, they're rerunning Green Arrow over the summer. The thing is, once their seasons end, they're immediately on Netflix as well. So,
see, and I'm not even familiar if there's any cartoons going on, like on Cartoon Network, because for a while there used to be a bunch, you know, Justice League Unlimited, again, Teen Titans Go. Those would be ones to tie in that would catch the kids' eye, but I don't think there's anything, at least nothing I'm aware of.
And when I look at the covers of the 100 pagers, those are, the kids aren't going to gravitate toward those. Those are going to be sold to teenagers, and I think that's why they've got them with the baseball cards and the other collectible type stuff, because yeah, the kids are going to be back in the magazines and the video games and the coloring books, and that's where you find your Archie Digests and your Marvel Digests, actually. I saw a couple of the new Marvel Digests back there, but where they've got them, I think it's more teenagers. I think they're aiming at teenagers.
Cool.
But you read a bunch of comics.
I done did.
I did too.
What?
I That's know.
Unheard of. Unheard of.
Well, I had part. I had most of the weekend off. I watched like 4 movies. I did some cleaning, so now I must hate myself. Well, who am I kidding? I don't need to clean to hate myself. I hate myself anyway.
You and your raccoon abuse. I've had enough.
And I read some comics. I think about that, Joe. I had a weekend off. It was kind of a preview of what's going to happen in October. I watched movies. I watched wrestling. I went to the gym. I did some read a bunch of stuff, and I took naps. Oh my God, did I take naps? Glorious naps. Glorious. Wow, what was that sound? But no, what did you read?
I, even though I did not get it in my box day, decided since it was such a fantastic day today, as we are recording this, that I would trek down to my favorite local comic book shop, Source Comics and Game, and fight my way through the throngs of customers.
Were there throngs? Actually,
well, no, I went afternoon, because you usually by 10 o'clock, boy, every new comic fan in existence is out getting the books. And I decided, even though I have one coming, that I was going to pick me up a copy of the new Fantastic Four number one, just so we could talk about it on this here podcast. You see the types of sacrifices I make
for for these people.
I know, and I had a tough choice because there were a ton of
special covers.
Oh yeah, and I, you know, the one I really wanted was the rare black and white Jack Kirby cover.
You can't afford it.
Well, no, it's about $20 on eBay.
Oh.
I decided to go for the color one, which was cover price, because that's the way the Source rolls. They give away their stuff to as many of their regulars, and then everything else, you know, granted, the 1 in 200, Jim Lee, Fantastic Four ain't going to be on the shelf.
Did they have the Art Adams cover?
They did. There was a few of them on the shelf.
You know what? Next time you go back, grab me one, because I've actually seen it now. Because, you know, when you look at it postage stamp size, you don't really get blown away. But I guess 1 and 2 are his the commission he did, where he took Fantastic Four number 100, the cover by Kirby, and expanded it out and did it Art Adams art style. So I want both of those.
I hate to say they'll probably be gone because there weren't that many on the shelf.
Ah, well.
But it's worth a shot. The first thing that surprised me is I opened it up and it said Steve Ditko. Thank you, Steve. A nice little blurb. Across from it on the inside cover was the classic when Doctor Strange finally met Eternity. And you open it up, there's the quintessential final chapter, Spider-Man, the one that to this day we drop our jaw over. Quick note from Joe Quesada, C.B. Cebulski, and Nick Lowe.
Nick Lowe.
VP of Content, Digital Publishing. So that was a classy, unexpected, and much appreciated surprise when I open up the front cover. I imagine other books for this month will have it, but that was kind of cool. We know who the Fantastic Four is. We know what's happened. We know they haven't been around. Everybody thinks they're dead. You know, Superman died too, you know. And this is basically just kind of the setup, you know, and there's a few surprises in it, and because it's so new, I don't really want to drop it, but it is a pretty good book. I wasn't quite sure how they were going to keep me involved, but they most definitely will be. And then you break away, there's a little blurb as to what Dr. Doom's up to, because last we saw in, and I suppose, I don't know, is it a spoiler now if I give away what happened at the end of the Iron Man?
No.
His face got fucked up again. I mean, pardon, you know, which is bad.
He just can't seem to keep things together, can he?
Nope, but it'll be interesting to see where they go with this. And then you get into the big page that Tranby wrote about, why, hello, nice to see you. It's been a while. You're looking well. Did you lose weight? I did. Thanks, Trim. But and then, of course, it guides into the next issue. And, you know, there was I guess you would call it a guest editorial at the end, because somebody was very pissed off that I waited this long for a new FF and they're not even back yet. So a very promising start. I am very eager to see where Slott and company go with this, because obviously his run on Spider-Man was fantastic. Actually, it was amazing. In this case, I'm hoping it to be fantastic. Get it? So that was definitely worthwhile picking up, and I'd say go check it out. You know, and I imagine as time goes on and we get a couple months under our belt, we'll probably be revisiting this. What's your first one up to bat?
My first one up to bat, I actually read another book by Dan Slott. And that is Tony Stark Iron Man. I read the first two issues. And I'm glad I read the first two issues, because the first issue spent so much time setting things up that by the end of it, I really was not impressed. It should have been a double-sized issue, because he had so much stuff to set up. And by the time he was done, I was just like, ugh, nothing happened. There's too much. There are too many characters. He's made it a team book. And I want Iron Man.
And I'm not getting enough of Tony Stark. I'm not getting enough Iron Man. I'm getting too much of all these other characters. And in the second issue, he kind of pulls back, goes for a very standard old school Iron Man story. Someone has stolen some of Tony Stark's technology and used it to make weapons. So he has to go stop them. If I had a dollar for every time I'd read that, I'd be able to go buy enough pizza to last me a lifetime. But it pulled back a bit, moved some of the supporting character stories forward. It made Jocasta's in it, made her interesting for the first time in a bajillion years. Had James Rhodes in it, and I like that he's dealing with the fact that James Rhodes died and came back to life. Because too often when someone dies in comics and then comes back, they're kind of freaked out for an issue or two, and then it's, oh, everything's back to normal, did you miss me? Nope. This is dealing with the fact what it must feel like, especially with James Rhodes being a former soldier, is very well put together. The action sequences are cool. My only problem with Iron Man, and it's kind of a line-wide problem I have with Marvel, back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, the Marvel superheroes technology was just a little out ahead of the curve. Now, it's so far out ahead of the curve that Marvel, to me anyway, has completely lost that feeling of, it's just like our world, except superheroes are in it. Because, oh, let's just go to another star system. Let's do this. You know, Doctor Strange is like, huh, my magic doesn't work. Guess I better go to another galaxy. And there's still that feeling of, okay, you're way out ahead. This is more science fiction than superhero. But that's a minor quibble. I do like the characters. I like that he's juggling a lot of supporting characters. One of the problems I've had with Marvel books over the past few years is that the supporting cast seems to be, if it's not a superhero, no one cares. I think it's good that they brought back some of the old supporting characters. Bethany Cabe is in the book. I bet most people don't even remember Bethany Cabe.
I'm Googling her now.
She was Tony Stark's girlfriend in the David Michelinie, Bob Layton issues. And then Denny O'Neill just kind of forgot about her. Denny O'Neill took over Iron Man and just kind of forgot, oh yeah, Tony had a girlfriend. So, I liked it. It was a lot of fun. It's a good Iron Man book. Joe, what was next on your list?
Well, I was a little apprehensive because there's a new creative team on one of the books that I've been reading forever, The Amazing Spider-Man. And just by happen chance, I ended up with two issues. So, I was able to read the first one, go into the second one. Again, the first one was bigger, I guess, than usual, and had a lot of setup, and basically they're kind of returning Spider-Man to the loser status that he'd been having all these years. They set it up. The Avengers don't like him. The mayor is William Fisk, the Kingpin. He's doing stuff. He is losing his degree because apparently he, as the superior Spider-Man, when Dr. Octopus finished his degree, now they're realizing that Peter Parker basically plagiarized his final project or whatever from Dr. Octopus. Aunt May's mad at him. So basically everything seems to be going bad. And so it kind of sets the tone without really being too jarring, you know, because you think about it. I mean, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, he's gone from some geeky teenager to marrying a supermodel to becoming a worldwide known commodity with Parker Industries. And he was finally came into his own with the Avengers. And it's like, where can you go? Because he's been at the top of the hill. Well, He's at the bottom now.
And, Although I'm going to push back really hard. I am so tired of the, Mary Jane was a supermodel. The guy who complained about her being a supermodel, John Byrne, is the one who made her a supermodel. Before John Byrne took over, Mary Jane was a catalog model. They aren't supermodels. A soap opera actress. Not really supermodel.
I would disagree. By the time McFarlane got a hold of her, she was a supermodel.
No, she was still doing catalogs. He drew her like a supermodel, but she wasn't doing runway stuff.
Yep.
They were always struggling for money.
His books are found in quarter bins everywhere.
Yeah. No.
Exactly.
That's why Peter Parker's book was found in the remainder books. Remember that?
Speaking of the end of two, you mentioned Peter Parker. Interesting surprise, and had I read this before I went to the source, I'd probably be reading issue three, because I think it's out. I don't recall, because I know I order them online, and so I just wait for them to show up. So, it doesn't matter. Byrne made her a supermodel. She was a supermodel.
And that's always pissed me off, because Byrne said, I hate the fact that Mary Jane's a supermodel. First issue he does, you know, she's a famous runway model, to which those of us who've been reading the book were like, what? And Gary Conway, of course, who's, you know, I love Gary Conway, he no longer gives a damn, said, you know, there was a reason we had her doing lingerie shots in sleazy, you know, doing sleazy lingerie shots, sleazy lingerie shots and catalog modeling and being third banana on a soap opera. Because we didn't want it to be her as a supermodel. We wanted the Parkers to be struggling. Peter Parker always has to struggle. He's not interesting if he's not struggling.
Well, then you're going to love Amazing Spider-Man 1 because he's
I do.
Yeah, you raved about it already. What's up next for you?
Next for me was an older book. No, I'll do one of the new ones. I read Batman 66 Archie, the Batman 66 Archie crossover. The first issue is out, and it's really simple. The villains of Gotham City are sick of Batman beating the crap out of them, so they go to Riverdale to pull their shenanigans. That sounds like it would work, right, Joe?
Sure.
It really doesn't. There's too much going on. It jumps around way too much. It's very disjointed. It looks okay. It's a meshing of the Archie and the Batman 66 style, which works well enough. But the story just jumps around way too much. Way, way, way too many characters. There's an opening sequence where Batman is fighting a villain, and the bookworm is in it, and that sequence I liked, but then when we get to Riverdale, and we're cutting back and forth, and we're dealing with Mr. Lodge, and then we're dealing with Commissioner Gordon, and back and forth, and back and forth, I'm not the brightest guy on the planet, but I like to think that I can follow a simple comic book story. There were times I had to go, wait a minute, and page back a couple of pages to go, oh, okay, that's where those characters were. It's too jumpy. It's too messy. It needed smoother transitions. And it's one of the I think it shows not every big crossover can be cool if you're ham-fisting it and slamming everything together without good plotting. I think the plot is lacking because the structure is poor. Maybe it'll be different when it's all collected and I can read it all at once, but it just didn't work for me, and it should work. It's one of those comics that should work. On the buy, borrow, or ignore, I actually have put that on an ignore. Joe?
Which is probably sad because you've already reordered two issues.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yep. I've ordered all four.
Yeah. Oh. This one is called Little Girl from Devil's Due Comics. I believe it's a four-issue miniseries. And it is... let's see who's doing it. There's four creators. It's kind of a horror story. Marvel novelist and Destiny New York creator Pat Shand and artist Olivia Pelaez, who we've seen in Modern Dread and Kitchen Witch. It's kind of a ghost story, and I enjoyed the first issue. It was kind of haunting. I mean, the protagonist doesn't realize she's being haunted, and when she does, it's a little too late. I can't help but think, like most of the time when I read something out of a smaller press, that they're aiming this one for maybe a movie or something, because I think as a movie it would be much, much more chilling. But there are a couple scenes that, the way the comic delivered, that just kind of chilled me as I was reading. And I was sitting outside in 90-degree heat, pure sunlight on my deck. And I was like, ugh. So I believe, like I said, it's a 4-issue series. Usually when I start something like this, I make sure it's a mini series. So either pick it up now or pick it up in the inevitable graphic novel. Again, it's out of Devil's Due Comic. I'm not a big horror fan, but this one definitely caught my attention. And again, you know, it's a newer book, so I don't want to give away too much. But if horror is your thing, this is definitely one you probably want to check out. Mr. Strode.
I didn't like an Archie book, but there was another Archie book that I picked up that I absolutely loved. And that is Archie 32, the last Mark Waid issue before they do the Archie 1941 miniseries. Then Waid will come back, he'll do Archie 699, and then Nick Spencer, who's doing Amazing Spider-Man, takes over. This wraps up all of Mark Waid's plots with... basically, at a school dance, Cheryl Blossom's dad has shown up and taken everybody hostage. So it's a great mix of what Waid has been doing all along, taking the Archie gang and Riverdale seriously while still remembering the humor and remembering the characters drive the story. It's like a very, very special episode of an Archie sitcom, but it works. It also wraps everything up in a nice little bow and reminds me of why I liked Mark Waid's Archie in the first place. He got the characters. The characters are archetypes. They've been around since the 40s. But he shows you can still do new stuff with them and take them in new directions and not lose the quintessential core of these characters. Mark Waid's run on Archie was fantastic. I cannot recommend it enough. And, dear Archie, I know you've put them out in trades. Put them out in a big omnibus, damn it. I'm one of those idiots who'd buy it. Joe?
Let's see. We'll say Christopher Cantwell is the writer. Martin Morazzo is the artist. The publisher is Dark Horse under Burger Books. She Could Fly, number one. This is one of those where... you know, the beginning's going on. You're not quite sure. There's a lot of setup. You're just kind of going along with the story to see what's happening. And by the time it gets to the end of issue one, you're like, okay, it's going to be continued issue two. I believe, again, another 4-issue miniseries. I will recommend waiting till you get all four, and I might revisit it. Because as of for one, it didn't really give me a lot. Maybe I just need to go reread it because it's, you know, there's a lot going on, and I'm sure by the time I get to the end, I'm going to be going, oh man, that was fun. But as just a standalone first issue, I don't know, I'm not satisfied. I would not ignore it, but I would definitely go take a peek at it. And like I said, if you can pick up all four, read them at once or wait for the trade, because sometimes that's the best way to do it. Mr. Strode?
The last of the new comics I read was another one that I was kind of and that is The Life of Captain Marvel. They have canceled the Captain Marvel series to do a mini-series telling the life story, backstory, and probably to put out a really nice trade paperback when the movie comes out of the Carol Danvers Captain Marvel. And while I like the story... it's not a comic book. The author writes young adult novels. This is a great young adult novel. as a comic book, it's a lot of people just standing around and talking and talking and sitting and talking and standing and talking and walking and talking and sitting and talking. And when the problem I have with this story, and again, it's construction. Story construction matters. Carol Danvers goes back to her hometown to spend time with her family and has to stay there. Something happens that she has to stay there. And she's working something through. But we never get an idea of what she's trying to work through. She's, you know, when Tony Stark says, you know, when are you coming back? I don't know. What do you need to do? I don't know. Well, if she doesn't know, we as a reader don't know. And if we don't know, we're not going to care. Joe, you've seen Casablanca, right?
I have, one of my faves.
All right. What drives the story of Casablanca?
I don't know. For me, it's the compelling characters and what's going on with them.
But what is it? Why doesn't Rick take the papers and leave? He's got the transit papers. He can leave at any time. Why doesn't he?
He's still pining for the woman.
Right. He wants her to go with. And she doesn't. She wants to go with her husband, but she still loves him. But she knows it's important to go with the husband. There's a reason why the story is happening. We know what the characters want. I don't know what Captain Marvel wants. I don't know what Carol Danvers wants. It's nice that we're getting, you know, her backstory and we're seeing about her family and we're learning about all of this stuff in her past. But we don't know what she wants. And if you don't know what a character wants, why should you care? You've seen Star Wars, right?
Never last.
What does Luke Skywalker want?
Wants to be a Jedi.
Right. What does Han Solo want?
Leia, I think.
And?
Well, money, of course.
Yeah, to pay off Jabba. Everybody has something they want. If you're reading a story and you don't know what the character wants, you're not going to care. And by the middle of the story, I didn't care because I didn't know what she wants. So, it looks nice. I'm sure it will sell very well to the audience it's aimed at, which is the young girls who go see Captain Marvel and go, oh, cool! But for me as a reader, the editor should have stepped in and made the writer focus a little better. Joe, we've been at this for almost an hour, so let's just do two more. You do two and
I'll do two. Okay. I picked up, for a buck, The Cape, which is from IDW. And basically it's about a gentleman who, as a kid, fell out of a tree and really effed himself up. And through the course of his dumbass choices and that, he gets back to his mom's, discovers the childhood cape he had when he fell out of said tree can make him fly. So what would you imagine you would do if suddenly you found out you could fly? Well, let's put it this way. This guy is an evil son of a bitch. And you know, you will read it. The tagline is, you will believe a bad man can fly. And being that this was just a dollar teaser, I mean, I'm drooling to get more. And I think, I don't know when this dollar thing was published. Oh, 2018, so it's pretty good. So the regular issue should be out. They have a hardcover collection that's on sale now. And I do believe I will be hunting it out because this, for a dollar comic to just get me going this well, this is what they're for. I got a chance to try something cheap. It really got my interest. And I will be, you know, like I said, either hunt it. Well, I'll probably just hunt out the hardcover and read it. The Cape is from Joe Hill. If you're a fan of Lock and Key, you'll recognize the name, and you probably recognize his other name, Will Eisner, as this particular comic was a Will Eisner nominee. So it's got some chops behind it. I would say either go pick up, I guess IDW calls their $1 comics the greatest hits, if you just want to try it, or just go all balls out and go get that hardcover and try it. So, yeah, I give this one. This one definitely surprised the heck out of me, and it doesn't happen too often. I mean, yeah, I read Superman, I read Spider-Man, I read all the other guys. I know what I'm expecting, but I read this particular one. I was not expecting what happened, and it was kind of fun too because when he I'm not gonna give away the ending of the one issue, but when he does what he's gonna do, I'm like, whoa, was not ready for that. So pick that baby up. It's only gonna cost you a buck to try.
Next book I read, I actually, I had a lot of sleep shifts last week, so I loaded it up on my tablet. And every evening would read one of the issues of Tales of the Zombie. So the Tales of the Zombie Essential, which is probably out of print, but if you dig around, you can still get it. Tales of the Zombie was one of the Marvel black and white magazines of the 70s. And they used the old Simon Garth character from the 50s that was in a single story by Stan Lee and Bill Everett. It was
a zombie.
Yep, it was one of the stories in their monster mags before the Comics Code, because at the time this comic was, at the time this magazine was printed, you couldn't have zombies in code-approved comics. That's why instead they fought Zumbafies. Basically, it's the same thing, just spelled different. But the most of the zombie stories were written by Steve Gerber, drawn by Pablo Marcus. And Gerber basically is doing another story about a lead character who is mindless, has no control over themselves, much like Man-Thing. Except this goes in a different direction, and whoever holds the he wears an amulet, and whoever has the other amulet controls the character. And he told a story with a beginning, middle, and end, because he left before the last issue, before the issue number 9, Tony Isabella wrapped it up where the zombie basically is laid to rest. And then, who was supposed to take over? Oh, Gary Conway was supposed to take over, and he wrote a script and sent it to an artist in the Philippines who never, ever returned any art. So issue 10 of Tales of the Zombie doesn't have the zombie in it. It's a Brother Voodoo story. And there are some Brother Voodoo stories. There are some short stories. A lot of text pieces. Some short stories. One written by Chris Claremont, of all people. My only problem with it is that everything in the book had to do with voodoo. And this is after Night of the Living Dead. This is after all of the Italian knockoffs of Night of the Living Dead were coming out. But no, all the stories had to do with voodoo zombies. And it gets a little one-note if you're reading it in a row. But goddamn, those Gerber stories drawn by Pablo Marcos, those were brilliant. They were so well done. And Pablo Marcos's art just sings in black and white. Just sings. I'd never been a big fan of his when I saw his work in color. But in black and white, the man was a genius. So, as long as you don't mind the fact that Steve Gerber wrote novels in between the, in each panel, Tales of the Zombie, I give a big thumbs up. Joe?
Another burger book out of Dark Horse. When we geeked on when we ordered it. David Aja and...
And Ascenti, yes.
The Seeds. Another book. I'm not sure what the F is going on. The art is black and white. It is very good. I mean, it's awesome art. One of the things I constantly complain about is when I have to go back and try to figure out which character is which. Not a problem here. The only thing I can make heads or tails out of this is that there is a wall, and when people go over the wall, it's a no technology zone. Otherwise, if you're on this side of the wall, technology pretty much invades every part of your life. People who go over the wall are kind of looked at as weird losers. There's a couple of beings talking about collecting seeds. I kind of get the gist that they're collecting seeds for the earth because the earth will either be destroyed or doomed or somehow, and that's why they want to keep the seeds, much like, you know, we put seeds in a vault in Norway in case there's a catastrophe. I don't know where they're going with this. Sometimes the most gratifying things I've done, be it movie, TVs, or comics, are things that I don't have any clue what it is I'm reading. Unfortunately, in reality, it doesn't really work that way. You see movie trailers, people recommend movies. You know, we talk a lot about the previews. God, I wish I had enough money. I could just walk down the source and just say, okay, I like this title. I like this cover. I like this coloring, and just pick things up at random and read them. I can't do it. But with the seeds, I know we talked about it in a previews episode a while back, but I'm just having a blast with this one because I have no idea where they're going. 4-issue miniseries. Pick it up now or wait for the book.
Anna Senti and David Aja. I love David Aja's work.
And your last one, Mr. S?
The last one I have is actually a book. It showed up Monday in my box, and you know me, I'm big on comics history, and this is an era of comics history that I know bits and pieces of. But it's a book called The Comics Implosion.
Ooh.
And what it is, it's a new book from Tomorrow's, and I've talked in the past about where anymore, even if a Tomorrow's book, if their ad doesn't seem interesting, I ignore that and order the book, because Tomorrow's, they may have trouble writing ads, but their books are always good. This one is very narrow. It is about the DC explosion and implosion. What it was, when Jeanette Kahn took over DC, she wanted to raise sales. So what they decided was they were going to do an explosion. One of the issues that isn't talked about much when we talk about why comics aren't available in newsstands and stuff, and I actually have had a really good conversation with the publisher recently that may show up on the podcast soon, the price point. In the 50s, comics, you know, in the 30s and 40s, comics were a dime and magazines were a dime. And then in the 50s, comics stayed a dime and magazines went up to a quarter. And then in the 60s, magazines went up to 40 cents, and Dell Comics went up to 15 cents, and that's why their sales tumbled and why they eventually got out of comics and gave it over to Gold Key. Didn't know that before I read this book. But comics did not raise sales as much. What they did instead is they cut pages until they were 32 cents for a dime, and then eventually they had to start raising prices. Well, in the 70s, your magazines were $1, $1.50. Comics were 35 cents. And a lot of distributors would give them to the stores, and the stores wouldn't even put them on the shelf because, hey, in the space I could put a comic book, I could put a magazine that's a dollar. So instead of making 12 cents, I make 40 cents. Sorry, that's a no-brainer. So what Jeanette Kahn wanted to do was give people more for their money. She wanted to increase the size of comics and make all the DC books 50 cents. They were going to continue with 22 pages for the lead story and have an 8-page backup story. And that's also when they created the dollar comics. So DC, all their books were going to be either 50 cents or a dollar. And they really hyped it. They had ads. The DC explosion is coming. And they had all sorts of new characters that they were hyping. And new books that they were hyping. And the books came out. And then, Joe, what happened in the winter of 1978?
Disco was born. No, everything imploded.
The worst blizzard hit the East Coast in decades.
What do I care? I was a little punk. If it didn't hit us in Minnesota, I did not care.
It did hit us in Minnesota, but you were too young to know how serious it was. Because, you know, it was a nor'easter that came across, and it really hit the East Coast. Shutting down New York City. Shutting down interstates. Shut down all sorts of things, and comics weren't distributed. And magazines weren't distributed. So that when the snow was cleared and they started started going again, it's, well, you know, these comics, there's more comics, we don't need to ship those. So DC and Marvel both were left with bundles and bundles and bundles of comics that weren't even sent to the market, let alone selling. And this was a point, 78, both DC and Marvel were losing money, mostly because they were late. And we even did three podcasts on it, but if back in the 70s, if you were late getting your stuff to the printer, they would charge you for that. So it's okay, well, you know, you'd rented this time. It's like when you don't show up for your doctor's appointment, and they bill you anyway. It's the same thing. You rented this time on the printer. Well, we didn't have a book for it. Too bad. We're still charging you for it. So DC, the word came down from Warner's. You've lost too much money. Cut everything. DC cut the prices back to 35 cents. They still had all these backup stories, so they cut the lead feature to try and save costs. They canceled tons and tons of books. Marvel canceled a bunch of books, too. But DC, because they'd hyped the DC explosion, when the books didn't come out and so many books were canceled, fans called it the DC implosion. And there were so many books that were done and ready to go, but the books had been canceled or, you know, they weren't coming out. They needed to protect the copyright on them. So they went to the copier and they made like 35 to 40 copies. And they had somebody in the office draw up a cover, and they gave them out to people who worked in the office and a couple of the comic shops locally to maintain the copyright. And Joe, what was those two bundles of Xeroxes called? Does Joe know?
My brain's drawing a blank.
I even gave you a big box that had like 8th generation Xeroxes of it.
Yeah.
The canceled comics cavalcade.
Yep.
And in the book, they go over what was all in canceled comics cavalcade. They go over if any of those stories saw print, some of which still recently just saw print in trade paperbacks. But it's not written from an authoritarian viewpoint. It's very much where they take interviews of people from the time, from the comics reader and media scene, who were doing the reporting on comics news at the time. Recent interviews with creators, people who were interviewed in other Tomorrow's Magazine, to kind of put together chronologically what happened using interviews of the people who were there. It's a very well done book. It's an old fashioned type of bathroom book, and you pick it up, put it down, pick it up, put it down. But if you're into comics history, especially comics history, you know, that, because the 70s were kind of right before we got all the comics news. It's right before the Comics Buyer's Guide became journalistic. It's before the Comics Journal was in existence as, you know, a news magazine. So it's basically right before we were kind of let behind the curtain. And it's fascinating that way. If you're a comics history person, you want to read this book. It's incredibly well put together. I will say, if you're not interested in it, though, you may not want to pick it up, because the last third is, here's all the stuff that was in Canceled Comics Cavalcade. Here's the issues that they were going to be in. Here's where they might have saw print already. You know, on and on and on. So, Joe, if you really need to know what happened to the Green Team issues 2 and 3.
I do.
It's in Canceled, the DC implosion.
And I have a copy of it, so I'll know soon. Soon, Joe will know.
Well, you know who else knows a lot of stuff?
That could be almost anybody else in the universe besides us.
No, 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 not the Watcher. It's these guys, our sponsors. That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. Subject, advertising. Thanks.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, Rocket Raccoon just knows guns.
Yeah.
And we don't allow raccoons on the show anymore.
Not after what you did to him.
I know. I'm horrible.
You are.
You know who we do allow on the show, though?
Who?
All sorts of people, because we have tons of other podcasts, and you can hear about them right here. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts. We've got Scrabbling Across the West with Dave Cafell and his lovely bride, Stephanie. They travel across the country playing musical gigs, and at night they sit down to play Scrabble and talk about their day at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There's Novelcast over at novels.solitairerose.com, where I take the novels that I've written and turn them into audio podcasts. Currently, we are doing a novel called Do the Job, which is a murder mystery set in the world of 1980s professional wrestling. Then, over at badadvice.solitairerose.com, me, Corey Strode, and Wolfie B. Bad, along with Dan Moore, give bad advice to people who send in questions. That's bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is growing. Be there! You think NBC will get mad I used that? And now, we ask Corey, what's going on the eBays? Joe, I was out on the eBays this week.
You was? What did you find?
I got me my Thanos copter.
Oh, that's good. To tell you the truth, I've been trying to win one for you, but I keep getting sniped because, you know, I think, oh, I got it at, you know, $7.50. Oh, somebody bid $8. Son of a building block.
I got it for $10.
Cool.
So I'm pretty happy about that. And David Anthony Kraft, who was writing Spidey Super Stories at the time, a Marvel writer, Marvel editor, had been joking about how he didn't get anything. They didn't even send him one. No royalties. And remember when I said, I'll give you royalties? When I got one, I sent him a dollar on Facebook. And he politely declined, saying, no, I really can't take it. I'm just happy that you enjoy, you know, that you had a lot of fun, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, well, you know what? I just want to thank you, not just for the comics you wrote, not just for the Spidey Super Stories Thanos Copter, which always makes me laugh, but also Comics Interview. I read every issue of Comics Interview, and I want to thank you for, because I know that was a lot of work. And he was very humble and very gracious, and said that he needs to head out to eBay's to get himself a Thanos copter. So, Joe, what's going on with your eBay's?
Slow but steady. I haven't been putting a lot on, mostly because I've been in too much pain. And this week, now that I'm not in pain, I've been doing all the things that I've put off. But I will be moving more and more on, especially now that I can start moving things around. Like I said, I have no idea how long this pain-free period will last. So, doing a couple deals, a couple things that go on. Corey, have you ever made an offer?
Yes, I have.
So I have a lot of my auctions are up as that. So if you go on and you make an offer, more than oftentimes I'll consider it. There's a few times I don't. I mean, I had a couple $80 items and a guy wanted to give me $20 for it. And I was like, no. However, if you say you're a listener of this here show, I may go crazy. You see how I've worked the name in there, Corey? And say, yeah, and do it. You know, it's either that or bring it to the MCBA Fall Comic Con, which is October 6th, 2018.
You're going?
10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Well, if my hip holds out, I may. And even if I go, I probably won't be doing a lot of walking because I don't want to really push it. Remember how this whole hip watch started? I mean, I went to the con, and then my wife and I went up north, did a lot of hiking, and I came back, and my hip was gone. So I just kind of pushed it. I am hoping by then, October 6th, that my hip will actually be in one piece and I can go. If not, I happen to know September 1st, advanced tickets will be on sale, mcbacomiccons.com. Not only have the guest applications been out, and I know that's kind of weird that they have guest applications, but you got to remember one of the big things that the MCBA has done, and definitely under the auspices of our old pal Nick, he really emphasized small press and small publishers and artists. And there are just way more artists that want to get into the show than can possibly be accommodated, especially at the FallCon, because it's a smaller venue. You know, instead of being the big grandstand, it's at the Edumacation building.
Because you need to get edumacated.
It's still 33,000 square feet, and in case you're wondering, admission is pre-sale at $8 or at the door $10, and I imagine they'll have a dollar off food shelf donations, so bring some food for every one of those. So, yeah, I'm hoping to go there. I'm not even sure what I'll be doing with eBay's when I'm under. I imagine I'll have to shut it down for a while till I can actually get up and process eBay orders. So now is a good time for you to go and help me clear out this stuff, because I have well over 700-800 things. I'll be adding more, and you know, like I said, make an offer or maybe just buy it, and maybe I will. Let's give you something cool here. Well, over here I've got Jethro Tull's 50 for 50, celebrating Jethro Tull's 50th anniversary. Maybe I'll toss that in. Or over here I have the aforementioned The Pleasure Palace, the very steamy novel by Joan Lee.
Yes.
Stan Lee's wife. You know, she just wrote one, and can she write steamy sex scenes? So, KRAYZ online 24/7, kind of like this here podcast. Well, I mean, it's available 24. We're not on 24/7, but
you may not be.
Corey might be. I mean, he's kind of nuts. You know, I got 4 hours between my full-time job and my overnight job. I can fit in another part-time job. I need another job.
That's what this podcast is. You think I do this for fun?
You got money, but what about the time off between your sleeping job and your full-time job? You fit another job in there.
No, that's when I go to the gym.
No, you know, when you're at the gym, you could be doing something.
Well, I kind of will be. I'll be studying.
Slacker. Oh.
Believe it or not, Joe, when I'm on the treadmill, I will be studying.
You're slacking here. Meanwhile, I think I'm just going to take a nap.
Well, now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I put the headphones down and let Joe talk for an hour while I go play Doom. It's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, wake up. We need to know what you're freaking about.
I've already covered that. What are you freaking on? Seriously, I mean, the health is really the only thing. And, you know, there's good and bad. And I'm sure these people listening to podcasts are like, wait a minute. They're talking about health? How to cure blood pressure? Where's the comic books?
We got the comic books.
Yeah.
It has been way too damn long since I've done a series and review episode.
You should probably Maybe put out some feelers and get some people on that.
I have been trying very hard to get Joe to sit down and do another episode of Mess or Kung Fu, but he's too busy with his napping and his bad hip and his not being able to read and his having a family. And so I may soldier on without him, but series in review, I've been missing doing that. So look for more series in review because I'm feeling the itch, kids.
Or maybe you'll have somebody come up and say, hey, I will review. I don't know, ROM with you. Or you've been talking a lot about your giant size man thing. Let's review that. Matter of fact, if you got a, that would be kind of fun. If you know, we're looking for maybe some guest hosts, but if you've got a series you really dig and want to get a hold of Corey and talk about it, that would be your chance.
Yep, it's like doing DVD commentary. And I just watched a movie that if I had not have listened to the DVD commentary, I probably wouldn't have liked it as much. Because I recently saw Rio Bravo, which is a John Wayne, Dean Martin movie from 1959, directed by Howard Hawks. And when I watched it without the commentary, it's like, well, this is kind of slow, and it's okay. You know, I wasn't in love with the movie. But the commentary was by John Carpenter. Joe, tell the people who John Carpenter is.
He's a guy who was really good with woodwork. He worked on houses.
I am now taking away that shiny new dime. John Carpenter, director of Dark Star. Halloween. They Live. Escape from New York. Big Trouble in Little China. All sorts of great movies. And he talked about why it was one of his favorite movies. And that's the good thing about DVD commentary, when it's by someone who can explain, this is why it was done the way it was. So I want to get back to doing that so that I can talk more about the series I love and why. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Let's see. Oh, Sir Patrick Stewart's coming back to Star Trek.
Did you read the whole story on that?
I read a couple different ones on it, but did you see something that most people didn't?
Yes. In the announcement, the people in charge of CBS All Access basically said they want to have a Star Trek series on at all times. So they are going to be doing a Star Trek anthology series. Star Trek Discovery's been picked up for another season, and they sound like they're really ramping up on that. But they basically said within the next couple of years, they want to have a new episode of a Star Trek series on CBS All Access every week.
And if
it does well enough, they may have two a week, which would bring us back to the glory days of when we had Next Generation and Deep Space Nine both on at the same time.
Yeah.
Not so much Voyager.
You know, and that's the thing. I know. Well, Voyager was okay.
It was Deep like Space Nine was season. Awesome.
That first season was hard. As soon as they let Janeway put her hair down, you know, it was like, okay, then it started to get more interesting. And like every series, it's got a hit or miss. But it did give one of my favorite Q lines when Q's kid was tossed onto the Voyager, and he just had the Borg attack, and no matter what happened, Voyager was basically ineffective, and they're about ready to get assimilated, and everything freezes, and all the Borg disappear, and Q shows up, and he says to his son, who is, by the way, played by John DeLancey's real son, if the Continuum's told you once, they've told you 1,000 times, don't provoke the Borg! Which the geek in me starts thinking, wow, even the Q doesn't want the Borg running around, you know, provoked.
Q did provoke the Borg by basically tossing the Enterprise in front of them, then pulling them away.
Yeah, which I'm sure the Borg went, wait a minute, what the hell just happened?
We must find.
Now, did you watch much of that? Did you see the whole history of 7 of 9?
Yeah,
because I thought it was interesting because when they brought in, you know, I forget her name, was it Anya? Anya, her pre-Borg existence.
Yes, Anya.
And her family put forth, hey, there's a species we don't understand, and Starfleet was like, kind of look at it. And they found the Borg in the Alpha Quadrant. They got sucked into the Delta Quadrant. And then they kind of studied the Borg until something went wrong and they were all assimilated. So it was kind of like the Federation knew about the Borg, at least Starfleet knew about the Borg. They didn't quite understand what it was. And then, of course, did you ever see the Enterprise episode that tied in the First Contact?
I did not, because I tapped out on the first season of Enterprise, and I know I should go back and watch it, but I just tapped out.
The season where I talked about that when I was on one of my Voyage deployments. There was a season where a race attacked Earth, and a gigantic beam did a line from, like, southern United States through Florida across Cuba into South America, killing billions of people, and basically sent the Enterprise out at it. It was much like when Deep Space Nine started dealing with the Dominion War more seriously. And it has its faults. You know, occasionally there's, we're going to ignore everything and just do a Star Trek episode. But it was just that really kind of, to me, cemented it. And then, of course, by the time the fourth season came around, everybody was tapping out. Had it gone on a fifth season, they would have brought in the Romulan War, which, you know, they've done in the paperbacks and that. But anyways, the gist of the Borg thing was the remains of whatever Borg from First Contact land in the Arctic. They're found by, you know, different explorers. They thaw them out, which is a spectacularly bad idea for us because we know who they are. The Borg assimilate all these things, take off, and the Enterprise goes after them. And, the weird thing about it is that the one doctor gets affected, and he discovers nanites are the ones doing it. But none of this information survives into Picard's era. Or if it did, it was so top secret they didn't, you know, do anything. It's kind of like when you go back and watch the original episodes, and you're like, you kind of cringe because some of the technology is just so 60s. Oh, it's kind of the same thing. When Next Gen Borg came out, nanites weren't really public knowledge, you know?
Yeah.
So it's worth seeking out that one episode just because it was a kind of a flash in the pan, and I watched it and I was like, okay, you got my flash, and I didn't watch it again. But yeah, I mean, to me, what CBS is doing, they could, I don't know, the analogy series, something we pitched about, I'm sure, in an earlier podcast, you know, money on the table you could be doing. I don't know. They always have a tendency to never want to go back to visit old planets that they were in other episodes, but I'd lift that. If you make a compelling story why we should go back and visit, what was the planet with Zol and the naked people running around? The Apple. If you have a compelling reason to visit that, let us know. I would love to see Easter eggs, like they had one episode in Next Gen where they went to a graveyard where they park old ships, and figure a reason to visit the graveyard. Why didn't they? You know, in the background there's the Doomsday Machine just sitting there. They're just going to leave that thing floating around in between destroyed galaxies. You know, somebody's going to grab that thing and be all over it, try to figure out what it was. Okay, enough Star Trek talk. Okay, this is going the other direction. It's good. Every so often I talk about something like Star Trek and just go off on tangents. I like trains. I picked up this book called Railroad Collisions, A Deadly Story of Mismanaged Risk by George Swimmer. It's kind of weird putting this under the geeking because I am geeking on it, but it's basically talking about train accidents, their causes, and why a lot of them probably could have been avoided. And we're going to ask the Stroh. I'll toss you a dime on this one, but this isn't necessarily for a shiny new time. Mr. Stroh, on the front of a train, how many lights are there?
I'm going to guess one. I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to guess one.
You're kind of right, since there are actually three. Because you got the top regular light, and then you've got what they call the ditch lights, which are on the sides. Oftentimes they're on, and when you get to a intersection, they start flashing. Well, what the author of the book did is he went to he's based out of Chicago. He went to a place where there had been an accident where a woman was killed, and they're trying to figure out why. And when he went there at night, he discovered that you cannot tell if a train has just the one light on, you cannot tell it's coming at you from all the other lights in the background. So this person obviously thought it was safe, crossed, and was killed. Now he discovered that there actually have ditch lights on a lot of these trains. There are a few back then, and we're talking this is 1996, that they didn't have the ditch lights on. And he was trying to figure out why. Well, apparently they were mandated that they didn't have to go on until, I have to figure what it was, like 2006 or something. And it's not saying that the trains, the railroad companies didn't have them. They just didn't want to flip the switch for some reason to put them on. When they finally did, and they were mandated, highway train collisions dropped from 4,276 with over 488 deaths to 1,925 highway rail collisions with 247 deaths. All because of a flip of a switch that the railroads would not do without being mandated and told they had to. And of course, nobody has the authority to tell them to do it. They can just recommend they do it. It took an act of Congress to have them flip it on. And the author still has no reason why this happened. It's again, it's a moot point because now you see a front of a train, be it a light rail, you should see three lights. And what happens is when you see three lights, that kind of catches in your subconscious because that's not a normal light configuration. And that stops people from crossing in front of trains or walking across tracks and things like that. And all it took was a flip of a switch. And yes, I'm getting a little indignant, but this almost this entire book is just talking about things that the railroads could have done to make things safer that they didn't, either because of money or because they didn't want to afford it. We're seeing that argument going now. They have something called positive train control, which is when if a train engineer misses a signal, the train gives them 20 seconds and then starts shutting down. Because so many times they've missed a signal, or God forbid the signal's broken, and most of the time it isn't, leading to horrendous crashes, head-on collisions with another train. And, you know, just if you really want to Google train accidents, you'll find within the last year or so there's been accidents because they haven't been able to get positive train control in, either because of the cost or it's hard because if you got one track with five different railroads, it all has to work together and nobody wants to cooperate and say, this is the format we'll use. No, one train wants to do this, another company wants to do this. So it's an ongoing thing. Again, you know, Corey and I are more liberal in our outlook, but this is something where you see a meaningless regulation, flip the switch, turn the lights on, had major consequences in terms of saving lives and causing less accidents. So again, this book is just full of stuff. It's essentially, this guy's papers because he's been working on these, particular, issue for years. It even gets into some of the things that I remember. I mean, there was an accident back in, I think a bus was too big and a train hit it and wiped it off its chassis, killing like five students. And I remember the headlines on that one. And it was just a different errors coming together because usually accidents aren't just a single problem. It's a bunch of them coming together. And, you know, and the sad thing is it deals with people too, because a lot of this is he comes and discovers this person died, in this case, the woman. And he investigates and discovers what happens. So again, if you're a railroad fan, you probably want to read this. If you're not, just ignore what I said. TV wise, I started watching The Untold History of the United States. also known as Oliver Stone's Untold History of the United States.
Yes, I watched that a few months ago. Loved it. Oh, absolutely loved it.
Just started it. Now, I started from the beginning. Again, this is basically, it's a 2012 documentary series directed, produced, narrated by Oliver Stone. It starts with World War II, covers the reasons of World War, the Cold War, the decision to drop atomic bombs. Again, I'm just on the first episode. There's even a companion book, which I've seen. I'll have to pick up. And I just watched the first episode, and I was amazed. And I know Corey already knows the answer, but the big thing that struck me in that first episode, they're talking about World War II. And just everybody's like, well, the United States, this was the war. We came in and saved the day. Yeah.
No.
Not really. And they talk about the amount of deaths that the countries did. And, you know, United States had 250,000 to 500,000 people die in World War II. Corey, do you remember what the Soviet Union's number was?
Like, what, 10 million, I think?
Oh, higher. I think it was closer to like 25 million. Because while we were busy trying to get our act together, Stalin and Hitler were fighting on their front, and it was just a meat factory. The Soviets just fought with everything they had. People were dying. They were dying under siege. It's just appalling that the Japanese were in Manchuria and getting into China, and they lost another 20 million people. You know, I'm not saying what we lost was horrific, but had Japan not attacked Pearl Harbor, we might be in a very different world right now, because there was no way the United States were going to get in there. Had Germany not declared war on the United States, because we had just declared war on Japan, and then Hitler decided to declare war on us, which is weird because he didn't even like the Japanese. A lot of what ifs, but just and that was the first episode. I'm a history buff. I like it a lot more that I don't have to study it, cough it up in tests, and write papers on it. And this one was just fascinating, and I cannot wait to get into the next episode, which I'll probably watch either later tonight or you know, by the time next week rolls around. So if you're a history buff or you just want to read something other than the sanitized version we get coughed up when we're in school, this is definitely the series for you. I think I've talked enough. Corey, what are you geeking on? What's got you revved up and excited?
Well, the first thing is that Joe, Dan Slott left Spider-Man, right?
Yes.
He's coming back! He's back!
What?
He's going to be writing Spider-Geddon, which is a sequel to the Spider-Verse, which shouldn't surprise us.
I haven't read that.
Which shouldn't surprise us, seeing as how there's a Spider-Verse animated movie coming out in December, and Marvel's very good about making sure they tie into their movies. Joe Quesada knows where his bread is buttered. But Dan Slott doing Spider-Man stories. My second geeking is actually Spider-Man related. They are getting a new creative team on Spider-Gwen. You know what that means, Joe?
You're going to buy tons of blank covers and go out and get people to do art for you.
Well, first, it means a new number one. And with the new number one, that means they're putting out blank covers. And I've talked in the past about how I sold off all my original art except for my Snakes on a Plane pages. And the Spider-Gwen stuff I have. And I decided to just kind of go whole hog. I'm going to pick up about way too many Spider-Gwen number ones. And then artists who I enjoy, who do commissions, of course, because it's not like I could... Hey, Bill Sienkiewicz, can you please do a Spider-Gwen number one if I send you a copy of the blank cover and $25? But
sounds to me like you're copying my idea for Supergirl.
Pretty much, yeah. But I just won them on the Spider-Gwen number one.
Cool.
So that's the first time I've ever done that. And of course, one of my friends on Facebook said, "Are you speculating?" No, these aren't going to be worth anything. I just want the blank.
Well, not necessarily. You find the right artist. You know, I mean,
no, I mean, just buying the Spider-Gwen number ones. They're
Oh, yeah. No, I was just saying, you know, if you had had Frank Cho at the MCBA con, you and had him do that, of course, Link covers weren't around and Spider-Gwen hadn't been invented yet.
And I did have, if you went up to him the first day, you wouldn't have got it. But if you went up to him the day after we pretty much raked him over the poker coals.
Pretty much, yeah.
Hey, Frank, you want some of your money back? And the last thing I'm geeking on, I hold in my hand, Joe, 12 DVD cases.
Ooh.
Let me read you some of the movies. The Night They Killed Rasputin and The Burning Court.
Rasputin.
The Amazing World of Ghosts and UFOs Target Earth. The Face of Terror and No Place Like Homicide. Here you go. Wild Ones on Wheels and The Secret File Hollywood. Neutron and Neutron versus the Zombies. A Steve Reeves movie. Some Hercules there. The Bloody Judge and The Legend of Spider Forest. That's right. The annual drive-in double features were put out by Sinister Cinema at sinistercinema.com. They are having their $12 for $99 DVD and book sale. And I picked up every single one of the new drive-in double features. They take two old movies, most of which you've never heard of before. They have an opening, like you're going to the drive-in and you're putting the speaker on your car. And then they have the coming attractions, and they have the intermission, and two crappy movies. And it's a wonderful package. They're $13 each, or, you know, 12 for $99 over at Sinister Cinema. The other thing they've started doing, they have Armchair Fiction, where they have found science fiction, fantasy, and crime novels that have gone into public domain, and they print those up as two books for $12.95. A little rich for my blood when I can go into the back room at Dreamhaven and catch some sort of disease and a big bag of books for $20. But yeah, I am all set for my weekends off now, Joe. Popcorn. I have a popcorn maker that's as good as the movie theater. By the way, Joe, do you want the secret to make popcorn taste as good as the movie theater?
Dude, I'm trying to cut carbs here. Why are you killing me here?
Coconut oil. Butter-flavored coconut oil. That's what they use. That's why it tastes so good. I'm getting all set up for having actual days off because, like I said, I had days off except for my sleep shifts, and it was glorious.
Glorious!
There's that sound again.
Glorious!
Well, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about our health and comic books for an hour and a half.
And go get your blood sugars checked, your blood pressure. We need all the fans we can get.
Yep, make sure to get your annual checkup. They check all that stuff. And if you're reaching a certain age, they may give you something that you'd have to pay a hooker pay a hooker a couple $100 for.
Oh, that's the prostate exam.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the prostate exam. Joe?
And one of the last things he said to me, if you ever find yourself falling, Reed, and you will, life's one big free fall. Believe that somewhere, somehow, there will be someone there to catch you. Reed Richards, Earth 616. Because I think we have another one running around. Hit my music!
What you got for me? I
on, bitches!